Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today we will be talking about families with special needs and disabilities. I'm joined today with special guests, Elder Paul B. Piper of the Quorum of the 70. Welcome, Elder Piper.
Thank you.
It's such a privilege to have you here.
I'm thrilled to be with you today.
Actually, most people wouldn't know this, but I have a chance to work with you in my current calling and assignment, and I have to say it's been such a pleasure to learn from you. You're constantly instructing and teaching, but the way that you do it is so masterfully done. So I'm looking forward to the next half hour or so of being masterfully instructed.
Thanks.
No pressure, right?
Thanks for the pressure.
We also have two other guests, but Elder Piper, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to introduce our next guest because I think you're highly qualified to do so.
Well, I want to introduce one of the perfect women that I know on earth, and that's my wife, Lisa.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet a perfect woman.
Yeah, right.
Sister Piper, if you don't mind, tell me just a little bit about your family.
We have six children, two boys and four girls. We have nine grandchildren.
Wow, that's great.
With a brand new little baby. And our fifth child is Dora, and she has special needs.
Okay. This is one of the things I love about this program is here we're talking about families, obviously, and we have individuals who are neck deep in living life with families. And so I am going to call you the experts, but maybe it's because of experience. And so I look forward to learning from the things that you've experienced and things that you can help us to learn about this wonderful topic. We also have with us is Lori Featherstone, who is a member of the Young Women's General Board. Welcome, Sister Featherstone.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your family.
We have six sons. Three of them are hearing and three of them are deaf. So
oh, really?
Number 2, 3, and 6 are deaf.
Say that one more time, 2, 3, and 6.
Uh-huh, 2, 3, and 6.
This is going to be a great opportunity for us to explore. I think that your experience can help individuals understand. One of the things that I think so wonderful about this opportunity is we're really all in this together. This is what the gospel teaches. We are really part of a whole family in a large setting. And as such, the question comes up is how can we help each other in being able to navigate the waters that we are in, whatever that might be? And one of the things that I would like to get your feedback and have you help me and others understand is the best ways that we can help families, how we can help individuals, and those around families who are dealing with or experiencing family members who have special needs and or disabilities. Now, this is a sensitive thing, and so I want you to help me with this, is even talking about this is a tender experience for some. So you have families in circumstances where it's very sensitive for them. So sometimes people will come and they'll use terms or they'll use labels that are hurtful. Sometimes, by the way, I have experienced that they don't even realize they're touching upon sensitive ground. So what has been your experience in helping others understand and to be appropriate in discussing topics like this? Any thoughts?
I think when they see my daughter, they will ask mostly, especially children will ask, what's wrong with her? And I think that's fine. I love the opportunity to be able to say, actually, nothing's wrong. She's perfect. She just doesn't speak quite like we do because she doesn't speak. And she doesn't react quite the same. But that gives me a chance to explain how she is and why and who she is. And as we answer questions, then people can understand. And then they say, oh, okay, you know, that's fine.
This is good. So, does it bother you when people ask then? Or do you get tired of it? Or do you welcome the opportunity? You say you get the chance. It sounds like it's an opportunity.
I think so. I've never been bothered by it. If they don't ask, I feel like sometimes I have to explain. And sometimes I don't. But I prefer that they ask because then I actually know they've noticed her and they want to know. And it's actually a very nice thing for me to hear that because they're willing to understand who she is and what she's like. And so I think it's a great thing.
I think this is helpful because I think a lot of individuals, they're not quite sure how to act. They don't want to impose. They don't want to put you on the spot. It's kind of like, how many times do I have to say why my arm's in a sling? You get tired of explaining the same thing over and over. But as a parent, I like this, is it's okay to approach individuals and ask the honest question. Am I correct?
I think that's true, because like I was saying, it shows that they have noticed her and that they're concerned and that they're willing to engage. And I think that's wonderful. It shows love on their part. So
that's helpful.
And like Lisa said, it's usually little children that ask. And we love when everyone asks. I mean, the more educated they are that we have the opportunity to share with them, the more comfortable they'll feel and the more acceptable our children feel.
That's good. And isn't it interesting? It is usually children. I think it's maybe, I don't know if it's because they're pure. We hear that all the time. But I think that they're naturally inquisitive. And what they're really seeking is answers. They want to make sense of the world around them. So why is the sky blue? What is going on here? And it's such a natural experience that natural answers for understanding can come out. I like that. That this is really good.
Well, they're uninhibited. So, of course, they're going to just do it because they want to figure things out. As you come in contact with special needs people, one thing that I try to do is to see if I can get some idea that they understand, then I don't go to their caretaker. I go directly to them and talk to them so that there is that sense, well, I'll go talk to the caretaker because they'll understand and they can explain. But I've found if you go directly to the person and take their hand and look them in the eye and talk to them, then it's saying you're just like me and I love you and I value you. It's not that I'm going to go over to someone standing next to you and figure out who you are. I want to find out from you. Now, that doesn't work with some because they're nonverbal, but it does with those that are. And I think that's one lesson that I've learned is to approach the person directly who has the special needs and talk to them. Give them the attention. Don't go to their caregiver or the person next to them.
In fact, we had a really sweet experience when our boys were really young. We had an opportunity to meet with doing one of the films that the church had, and my father-in-law's Von Featherstone, so all the family got to come to a special premiere. And our little son, Joseph, who was number two that's deaf, really wanted to meet an apostle. And so my father-in-law introduced him to Elder Oaks, and Elder Oaks, instead of going through us, he knelt down on his knees, looked straight in his eyes, and he knew he was deaf, but he just said, "What's your name?" And he just sat him on his knee, as just as the Savior would, and looked him right in the eyes and talked to him. And it was so tender and touching to us that that's exactly what Elder Piper said. Look at them in the eyes, talk to them, and treat them just as their souls are so valiant, and every soul is great in the sight of God, and they want to be a part. They want to be valued. They know that they're different, but they want to be a part and as normal as possible.
Well, we come back to we are all in this together because we all want that type of a validation. And isn't it interesting that we would think that we would avoid giving that validation to individuals? I think that's a common misperception. I think your comments here are very insightful. Wait a second. This is the way that the Lord actually does this. As I started off, I said, isn't this great? We're talking about families. And so we have individuals who are experiencing family. But actually, this program is called Gospel Solutions for Families. This isn't just talking about family experiences. And listen to what's been taking place here. This is really wonderful, is every comment is actually laced with or bathed in the restorative experience of gospel principles. So how would the Lord do this? Or how does Heavenly Father approach? He approaches individuals as individuals with the great value and worth that they have, as well as the potential of what they may become and values as such. Did that make sense? And I like this insight of, wait a second, we should be able to have that same feeling for all of God's children, regardless of circumstances.
Sister Piper gave a great sacrament meeting talk that you need to, she can teach you some of the principles she taught there, but I think it's one of the most profound thoughts that I've had on this subject, and she gave it to me, so I'll let her give it to you.
No pressure.
Yeah. They actually asked our daughter Dora to speak. She doesn't speak. And so, of course, I had to go up. And so she was standing next to me. And the gist of the idea was a lot of people, when they look at someone with special needs, they say, oh, what don't they do? You know, and a lot of times when I explain her, I will say, well, she doesn't talk. She doesn't walk by herself. She doesn't feed, you know, she doesn't. There's a whole list of things she doesn't do. But really, what we need to do is she has a whole list of things she can do. And we need to look at those things and say, oh, look, she smiles, she hugs, she understands, she loves. And those things are much more important. In the fact, those things are things of the heart. And the other things are mostly physical. But she does the things of the heart. And that communicates a whole lot to others. And others can feel that because that's what these special needs kids, a lot of times that's how they have to communicate and how they do. And so as we remember that and look on their heart, they are wonderful. You know, there's nothing, there is something special about them, but there's not a disability with them.
Elder Piper, that would be a good sacrament meeting talk. Maybe we should just all say amen and close the program. That was really nice.
It's define people by what they can do, not by what they can't do. Because if we talk again and again about what they can't do, then that's what they will define themselves as.
And I love the fact that they asked her to give a talk in sacrament meeting. I love that they get them involved. I mean, how grateful I am for bishops and those that are willing to take a chance and let our children participate. You know, we had one son that he was in a BYU singles ward, and the bishop called him to be the gospel doctrine teacher. And I was so grateful that, you know, they don't let their limitations get in their way, that they still let them serve. They want to serve.
This is really important.
I love that.
Yeah, it was nice.
In 1989, the First Presidency had a statement dealing with disabilities. I just circled a few words that popped out, and actually it was your comments that triggered my thought on this. It starts off by saying, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and then here I circled, is working to provide, is working. I circled that. The next line comes down, I circled, seeking more creative ways. And then I circled, even greater need to. In other words, one of the things I loved about the First Presidency statement is we recognize that what's happening, or at least that there is a need, but we are seeking, we are working towards, we are finding ways, and we want to improve. I love that aspect. So when you mention that they're extending callings and giving an opportunity to speak in sacrament meeting, I think that this is under the direction with the First Presidency saying we need to be more inclusive and seek better ways. But then again, isn't that what Paul teaches? Especially the letter he writes to the Thessalonians, we beseech ye, brethren, that ye increase more and more. It doesn't matter where you're at, your geography, your circumstance. It's we're asking everyone to be a little bit more and a little bit better. I think that's really quite wonderful. Now, coming back, I think this is helpful, is helping individuals to know how to help and how to nurture and support. Sometimes I've seen experiences where, and I'll admit, I didn't notice this very much until my nephew was born in our family with unique challenges. Sometimes people are saying, what's going on with Michael? Or what is Michael's situation? And I'm probably a little more sensitive to this now, but I've noticed some people, they honestly aren't aware of appropriate ways to ask and discuss. And I've seen both sides of the spectrum where some caretakers, family members, they're almost irritated and they want to teach, but they teach in a tone that makes people feel embarrassed and almost ashamed. And as a result, I think a lot of people don't want to ask because they use the wrong term. And then others who have been actually teaching individuals, here's how we go about this. Kind of like what you just did with your sacrament meeting talk. I found the tone of that and the content so helpful. Any thoughts on that of how we can help others understand in appropriate ways that brings them in to the desire to know more without saying, oh, well, I obviously didn't do that very well, and pushing back?
I think one of the things that in the church, participation in the church that keeps leaders from inviting more participation is they're worried about the implications of it. For instance, a young man passing the sacrament who may be marginal, maybe will say something or will do something during that would be disruptive. And I think we have to, in those cases, we have to sit down and talk about it. That's the answer to it. It's not there's a right way or a wrong way. It's you find what's right, and it may be right for a week, and then you wait a month. You can't just make a blanket statement because everyone is individual, and you have to sit down, figure out who is that individual, what will bless them, because you could hurt them just as much by having them do something that would destroy them as it would help them. So I think there has to be an engagement of parents with leaders and with teachers about how do we deal with these things. It's not a, here, we're going to hand them off here, and you hand them off here, and you do this, and you do that. We all have to gather around it and talk about their individual situation and what would bless their life and what do we need to help protect against so that we don't do something that would destroy their confidence or destroy their progress in some way or limit their progress, but at the same time not create a situation for those around them to resent them or something.
You know, I love this. As a matter of fact, going through my mind as you're speaking is a term we hear quite a bit lately is counseling together. And I'm thinking, you're saying talking about with the people that were necessary components for that to provide counsel one with another. And I actually feel, obviously, there's great benefit from the counseling process where it's taking into consideration, I love what you're saying, is individual experiences with all those that they're partaking in and have those role players come to make proper choices. That's really important. Lori?
I agree. It is all about counseling. We've just been blessed with such a wonderful word, family, but it has been counseling ever since they're little with the primary, with the priesthood brethren and then the primaries and the young men's and all along that as you educate them and them giving us an opportunity to come forward and educate the little primary kids and, you know, throughout the years. And so they grew up and eventually, which was a little disruptive, we'd had little kids from the back of the church because we teach sign language every Sunday. And in the summer times, we'd have little sign language camps for our neighborhood and ward. And
oh, really?
You'd see a little child start signing from the back of the chapel, clear up to the front of the chapel, and the answer comes back down and weaving back and forth. And you'd see all these little children signing. So it was a blessing for our kids, but sometimes maybe irreverent.
That's an interesting concept of irreverence.
Yeah, but it was
like
a great
this.
Blessing that they all blessed our lives between home teachers, visiting teachers, primary leaders and presidencies and teachers that loved our children and wanted the best for them. And also, too, you have to step forward, too, and say, you know, if it's not working and accept that, you know, well, that maybe isn't working right now and not be offended, but see what will work best for your child, for others.
I like this, and I love this. This important part is what's best for the child, and that's where the counseling comes in, is what a well-intentioned individual might say, well, we want to treat them the same in this way. So actually, this might not be the best way in this manner, but here is another way of which we can accomplish this. I was raised as a young man in a ward where I didn't even know that we had different experiences going on. I just thought this was the way every ward was. So here I am, a deacon passing the sacrament, and we had one of my fellow core members. He was visually impaired. He had no eyesight whatsoever. We had another individual who was hearing impaired. We had a priest in my Aaronic priesthood group who was dealing with epilepsy, and you never would know when a seizure would come on and things like that. And so sacrament meeting in my ward, I just thought this was the way it is, you know, and to see the ward, actually, it is touching when you were speaking, I was having these memories, seeing ward members who are helping this deacon who had no eyesight whatsoever, is how he could magnify his priesthood responsibilities within his capabilities, and everyone was helping him to magnify. And so they would place the tray in his hand, and then the next person behind would reach out and help him back to the next row, and then the deacons would take him to the next spot. He was every much as part of that quorum as any other deacon within the framework of which he could magnify. And there were occasions where I remember occasionally where this young man, where blessing the sacrament because he couldn't control it. He didn't know it was coming. A seizure would come. And I marvel at this as an adult now. As a young man, I just thought, oh, this is the way it is. Is we had individuals in our ward who knew what to do. They would stand up. They would assist. And everyone in the ward would just sit as if this was the way it is for everyone. And I didn't even know, because it was all part of a ward family working together to say meet needs. It was really a wonderful experience, actually. And I didn't even know that I was having such a wonderful experience. I thought this is just the way it is. Other ways that we might help individuals to know how to help in circumstances, or ward members. I love the fact of doing a signing camp to help individuals. What a beautiful idea. Any other thoughts that come up that you've experienced in your callings or dealing with others or from family members?
Well, I think that we have to take the initiative because we are the ones who know what our children need, or at least we think we have an idea. And so a lot of times we have to take the initiative. We have to have a signing camp, and we have to teach the other kids so that they can communicate. I think that's a wonderful thing that you can do. And a lot of times it is up to the parents to say, okay, we need to talk to the bishop. We need this to happen in our ward or something. And they can do it very sweetly and nicely. You know, they don't have to demand. They can just suggest that this would happen and this could be good. And otherwise, no one's going to know because they don't know the circumstances that you have. So
this is important. You can do this nicely. You don't have to demand. I think that this is an interesting component because these are individuals we love. And when you're passionate about a topic, passion sometimes is interpreted as a forceful, demanding way. And actually, it's just passion. And I love what you're saying is there's a way that we entreat individuals in by the way that we approach even sensitive topics, even passionate topics, that makes them want to be part of the fold. My sister-in-law was a good example of this. As I remember a situation, my nephew, he has Down syndrome. Somebody mentioned that, oh, so you have a Down syndrome boy. She's passionate about this. It's the label experience. She says, actually, this is Michael, and he has Down syndrome. And you hear this experience a lot of times when you're dealing with special needs and or disabilities of the people, they call it people first. And this was the way she taught this was actually great. And then I found out that they were doing that within the ward. It was a simple education to say, wait a second, if you learn to recognize, which is all your comments have been saying, we recognize individuals first and then whatever challenges they might have, that's afterwards. This was an instructive period and I thought it was helpful. Elder Piper?
I was going to say one of the things that parents need to do is to realize we can shape their experience. Before we go to the ward, we've got to be able to shape that experience with what we do. It's like our Dora who we could just take her in and have her sit and then get her up and leave. Or we can come, and she loves people, and so we come and we try to get there so she can take time to give people hugs. I mean, she loves to give hugs, and so she can't get down the aisle now without everyone demanding their hug from her every Sunday and leaving the chapel. She's usually the last one because everyone has to say, how's Sister Sunshine today or something, because that's that experience. It's partly who she is, but it's also how you help develop as a parent to let her have the kind of experience that would help bring that out in her and help her connect to a ward. So it's not all about just going to the ward and say connect. It's saying, if you think, how do we help connect them? How do we help them do it in a way that's appropriate and that's natural for them? And every one of them has something that they can connect with. And I think if we recognize that as parents and try to build on those connections, then that's a nice foundation for then moving to something else.
This is really good. Now, I'm going to take the liberty to put you on the spot on this. Is you say that parents can mold that experience. How do parents come to knowing how to do that? I think some parents are in circumstances like this and they're not quite sure. They might be saying or listening to you saying, wow, I didn't realize that I have such a role is where I can either cloister or keep them out or I can mold a situation. How did you come to discovering ways to be able to craft those situations, mold them appropriately? In what ways, how can you help parents discover this opportunity? How did you do that? Is it natural? For me, parenting was not natural. I'm constantly saying, what am I doing here? And I need to do better. I need to revise and revamp so I could use all the help I can in parenting. So I'm just wondering.
Well, I think it depends personality-wise because my husband, he will let Dora go all out and go to anybody she wants. And I don't. I keep her a little bit closer in because I don't want to bother other people. And because that's my personality, that's my way of thinking about it. Paul's is, of course, they want to hug her. That's his way of it's his personality. And so I think that's okay. It doesn't, you don't have to say, oh, I really don't want to go out and meet people, but I have to because that's what my child needs. And maybe if your child needs it, then you have to put yourself out a little bit more. But you can also, you know, some things, you do what comes naturally, I think, and you don't have to do something just because we say so.
Okay. surely there are stretching moments, though, is where you need to, like what you're saying, is what's natural. And I love what you're saying here is you're complementing each other in the ways that you approach this for the greater whole. But surely there is also a stretching time where you're like going, okay, I'm going to have to stretch a little bit here to be able to meet the needs of this child.
Well, it's you know, there's a lot of ADD, there's a lot of autism, and, you know, those children, if we're not careful, we can say they're disruptive children. Well, they're magnificent children who have some activity. I mean, take that activity and have them connect to some people with it. And not, I mean, you could say, if you could take the idea, I'm going to try to control them completely, and there are appropriate things we need to do in sacrament meeting and in other meetings. But helping them connect into that bigger family, I was talking to someone in the ward and said, you know, there's this one family and they have quite a few ADD children. And I said, but, you know, those kids, they just, you never know quite what to expect. But at the same time, they channel them into loving and serving and channel that in ways that it's great. Is it organized and orderly as some families would like? No, but it's channeled and it blesses people.
Oh, I like this. So the channeling is a directing experience. It's a leading and a guiding experience.
So those parents could come in to church and say, well, I've got a problem because my kids are ADD. Or they could say, you know, my kids are very active, and so I'm going to think of the ways that I can use that activity to help them go do things that will bless their neighbors and connect them to people who they can feel love from and strengthen them.
With the new youth curriculum that has just been in place since the beginning of this year, one of my favorite observations, we go out and have an opportunity to watch and see how things are going. I mean, the early stages of the pilot was actually with a class that had a young man with autism. And the big challenge they thought was going to be is, wait a second, so much of this new youth experience is depending upon engagement, having this participation and sharing in the learning, practicing what we're learning, and et cetera, and this will never work. Actually, it was completely the opposite. It was an experience where this class came together and they were finding ways to connect them with other people. And my goodness, I was almost teary through the entire time I would go through and visit this class to watch these young people help each other because they were connected to be able to, once again, magnify their opportunities, both for all people in the class. It was really nice. I like this concept of channeling that. Lori?
I love that too, and it kind of goes along with that. But I think as we all remember, because everyone learns a different way, and I loved how you brought up the child that has autism. And
autism isn't the same for everyone. There's many shades and variances of it.
Yes, and that every child learns differently, and some learn visually, and some, but that we need to remember that every spirit is programmed to progress. And that Joseph Smith said that all the minds and spirits that God ever sent into the world are susceptible of enlargement. And that we need to remember that all God's children can be enlarged, their spirits are to progress, and that they all learn in different ways, and that as we counsel together to what will work best for each of our children, that they have that opportunity, and that we need to expect too of our children that, you know, that they can progress, and to help them to be as independent as they possibly can be and be advocates for themselves as much as they can be, but always remembering, too, that we are one of their greatest advocates as parents.
But not hover to the point where they become dependent, because, I mean, what you've done is mainstreamed. I think all four of yours have, or
yeah.
all three of
all three of them.
All three of them you've mainstreamed in the school. So you've helped them really to operate independently in society, which is an amazing thing. And that's not possible in every case. But to think in every case, how do I help them become as much of an agent as I can help them become, rather than being hovering over them and saying, well, they're the poor thing, they have this disability, so I'm going to protect them. And as a result, we don't let that enlargement occur, and we don't facilitate it. We actually block it and keep it from happening.
I love this approach. Is what we're trying to do is to help our Father in heaven complete his mighty work, which is to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of all of his creations. And we have that privilege to help each individual in their individual needs. And so the gospel actually frames and shape this, as you said, that it gets us in the mindset of here's what we're doing to help progression to take place, as slight as it may seem to us, is still the progressive nature of the gospel. Well, sadly, we are out of time for this episode, but luckily, we will have a second episode that will help us to understand how we can help families with special needs and disabilities. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.